Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Charity Charge Show. Today, I have with us Brad Voss, who is the executive director of Made in the Streets. Brad, thank you so much for coming on this episode.
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
One of the things that we were chatting about before I hit the record button was just how are things going as you're approaching your end? And I brought up the concept of Giving Tuesday, which we recently had. And you sort of answered, which I thought in a really methodical and thoughtful way, of how Giving Tuesday and potentially year-end fundraising is just one piece of the whole picture. So I'm just curious if you can elaborate a little bit more on that and, you know, your perspective on fundraising to a potential someone who's listening, who's starting a new nonprofit or is, you know, as they get into planning for 2022, is maybe rethinking their fundraising strategy.
Sure. You know, it's interesting. We've been studying this and kind of watching the analytics over the last 5 years to kind of figure out some best practices for ourselves. And what we really decided this year was to look at kind of this whole season, kicking off kind of with Giving Tuesday and then ending with the last day of the year as a giving season campaign. And so we've got a whole roadmap we're using from beginning to end along that whole pathway. And we're not segmenting it out into different things as much as we're just seeing it. Okay, this is all one big campaign. And so we're doing a few things on the beginning here at Giving Tuesday, and then they've got a few other things coming this week and then the next week, and they just kind of, it trickles out, and there's different points along the way where we're making specific asks. And it all culminates kind of that last week. Honestly, we've learned that so much of our activity happens between Christmas Day and New Year's Eve. That everything we do from, you know, last Tuesday up until then is just building towards then. Mm. And so we're doing that. We also see it as a great opportunity to do some testing. We're doing some A/B testing with messaging just to see if we're clear in what we're saying and how we might say it better. We're testing some different channels like email versus snail mail. Some of our contacts are getting stuff in the mailbox this year and some are getting stuff in the email. We're going to see how that works out. Try to learn. One of the things we can always do during this time of year is learn what our donors, our supporters, our friends, our family, what they think about us, what they want to give towards, you know, and how we can serve them.
Thank you for sharing that. One of the things that I should share actually about your work Made in the Streets is just a little bit of info backstory on the organization. Made in the Streets is committed to transforming the lives of street kids in Kenya and around the world, with more than 60,000 children living on the streets of Nairobi and a growing estimate of 100 million street children worldwide. The needs are great, but so are those willing to help. Join us. So compelling. I'm reading this right, you know, from your LinkedIn, but I really appreciate how concise and direct, you know, you are just in sharing the mission and what you all are trying to do. I want to go there in a few minutes and talk about your work specifically with Made in the Streets, but I want to come back to what you were sharing about the A/B testing and the messaging, because I'd like you to elaborate on that. You know, one of the big things that has become ever more apparent this year is just how mission oriented and passionate people are that are starting brand new nonprofits, trying to tackle a specific cause area. And I've found that, you know, generally the people understand what they're trying to solve, but the business operations or the marketing or the fundraising things are areas where they lack. And I'm thinking that some people listening might not even understand the concept of, you know, A/B testing and the messaging and all of that. Yeah. So I'd like for you to expand on it. And, you know, what I want to share before giving you back the floor is, it's just so critical if you're running an organization to really figure out how you can communicate and in which ways, like where do you communicate to get your message out in front of people? Because we all respond differently to different messages, and the needs in the world are so great. And that is the critical gap that nonprofits fill. But if you're running an organization and you can't get the word out in the compelling way, you're not going to get the funding that, you know, your organization and the people that you're trying to serve need. So it is so important to get this fundraising piece done well and done right. Can you share some more and whatever experience you have of, you know, to where you are today? Because you obviously have done and are continuing to do tremendous work with Made in the Streets.
Thanks. Sure. I think one of the interesting things for me and my background is I did come out of a business culture into the nonprofit culture. And so in some ways that was quite an adjustment. I mean, the first few years I'm learning a lot of things that, you know, are different in the nonprofit culture. And yet I was able to bring some of the lessons and things I've learned from starting businesses and running businesses and working in businesses to this nonprofit space. And I'll kind of answer the question in two ways. The first thing is kind of the way I approach the people we serve. And so when I first made this move and took on, and I'm not the founder, I want to be clear about that. You know, I'm the second generation leader for an organization that's been around for 25 years. The board hired me 5 years ago to kind of replace the founder. And that has its challenges. We could do a whole podcast on that, right? Second generation leadership and founder syndrome and all that.
Absolutely.
But what I want to say is when I came in, my philosophy from the very beginning, from day one, is that our organization serves two groups of people. We serve these kids who live on the streets in Kenya. We're wanting to change their lives or help them change their lives, right? Serve them. But we also have this other group of people that we serve, and that's donors. That's people who are generous, who want to be generous, who want to give. And so from the beginning, I looked at everything we do as how do we serve these two groups of people? Because they're both people who are looking to us to lead, right? The street kids are looking to us for food and clothing and skills and education and jobs and spiritual formation, all these things that they're getting. But people in the West, you know, people in the US and in Europe primarily, who have more wealth than they need, are looking for ways to make a difference. They're looking for ways to change the world. They're looking for ways to give smartly and generously and more than they can. So everything we do really is trying to set up and build relationships with those two groups of people. So the first thing, like when we go into a season like this, we start out by saying, okay, we know we need funds to serve the kids during this season on the streets, but what are we going to do to serve the people who are going to give, right? What are we doing for them? And so part of that is telling a clear message. Part of them is helping them understand how they can help. Part of that is helping them understand some of the benefits of being a giver or a donor, right? Tax benefits. There's family benefits they have if they want to set up their funds in a different way. Just the joy that comes from giving, right? What do they get out of that, right? And so we're giving them things back that really help them understand how great it is to give. So that's kind of the first piece of the puzzle for us when we go into a season like this. The second piece of it is understanding that we think we have a compelling message, just like so many nonprofits. I mean, there are thousands of organizations, NGOs around the world that have compelling messages that are making a difference. But it's how do you make sure people hear that compelling message, right? There's more noise in the world today than there ever has been before. And it's good, a lot of it's good noise, right? It's not good or bad, right? You got entertainment, you got sports, you got business, you got news, you got politics, you got fill in the blank. And the compelling story that NGOs are doing is just another voice. And so how do we make sure people hear that? How do we make sure they click on our emails and read that story? Or how do we make sure they watch our video? How do we make sure they dive in and connect with us on social media? And so to figure out how to do that, you have to test. And so you have to test different messages on social media. You have to test different messages in your email. You have to test different subject lines in your email. So all these things, which I learned by being a customer-focused business prior to being a nonprofit, is bringing that in and saying, okay, let's learn from our donor base right now. What are they like? What are they saying back? What are they responding to? What makes them take action? So then we can get other people to do the same.
I love it. I appreciate you sharing that. Speaking of the donor base, what just high level is the breakdown of your supporters in the sense of individuals or corporate supporters, foundation, grants, and how do you think about fundraising and what are your thoughts on diversifying the fundraising sources?
That's a great, great question. So I'll tell you, 5 years ago, I inherited, you know, a nonprofit and a donor base that the number one struggled to track who its donors were. You could have asked any board member or the founder, you know, who are your donors? They'd say, I don't know, people who give. So, you know, you've got to start by knowing who's giving to you. Right. And so everybody needs a good CRM. Everybody needs a good, you know, tracking system. Everybody needs good dashboard to give you analytics on your donors and stuff like that. So the first step is knowing who they are. For us, we really want to try to diversify and we want to build that the bottom part of our pyramid as much as possible. Here's what I mean. We don't want to be dependent on any one or two or a handful of big major donors. We have major donors, but we don't define major donors as, you know, people giving 100,000 like some might. And it all depends on scale, right? We're more probably on the smaller side of things, but we have one or two that are really at the top of that pyramid. And those are typically organizations like a church. One of them is a church for us that gives a major chunk each year. But that big chunk, I think, is only 9% of our revenue. So the biggest single donor gives 9% of our annual revenue. And then you drop down from that and we've got, you know, a decent amount, probably about 30% that make up what for me is kind of this next stage of this pyramid. It's anywhere from, you know, 2,500 to, you know, 10,000 a year, right? Mm-hmm. About 30% of people give that kind of amount. But then underneath that is this big chunk, which for us, we're trying to build bigger. You know, for now, it's about 65%. I'm doing the math wrong. 61%, I guess. We want it to get even bigger than that. And that's those people who are given small donations. Those are those people who are given $5, $10, $25. For us, it's the people who give up to about $1,500. And so we aim a lot of our messaging, a lot of our relationship building at that group. And if you want, I can go a little bit deeper and tell you why.
Yeah, please.
Okay. So one reason is, we know that most people who give at a high level start out by giving at a low level.
I love what you're sharing. Yes.
Right. They're saying, look, I don't know you yet. I'm building a relationship with you. I want to test this out a little bit. So I'm going to give you $20, right? Some story hits their feed or some friend tells them about our organization. They're like, oh, that's interesting. Let's test this out with $20, because they're going to see what we do. Number one, what we do with that $20. And number two, they want to see what we do with them as a relationship. Is it just an ATM where we say, hey, thanks, bye? Or do we stay in touch with them and stay in contact and ask them for support in other ways? And do we share stories? And do we build a friendship over time? So that's one of the main reasons we build at that lower level is we want to build with people who are first-time givers, people who are testing out, people who don't know anything about us but may want to in the future. The other thing is that I realized for us, and this is for us specifically, because we are an organization that had been around 25 years with an older founder led, we were kind of top heavy in the age bracket of donors. And a lot of nonprofits are like this, I'm finding out, right? I mean, their average age might be 70. Mm-hmm. Ours was. And so we said, hey, that's not sustainable. Like, we're not planning on this ending when those people, you know, age out of giving for whatever reason. We want this to sustain long-term. And so we've got to build new donors every year and we've got to build younger donors. And so we do a lot of stuff to try to connect with younger donors who don't have the capacity to give. I'm amazed, by the way, how some younger donors, I'm talking about people under 30, give at a capacity that surprises me. But for the most part, you know, their capacity to give is, you know, maybe $5 a week or maybe, you know, $100 a year, $75 a year. That's great because that's what their capacity to give is. And as their capacity grows, as they get better job, as they get older, as they increase their own wealth, they're going to want to give more if they trust the organizations that they're giving to from the beginning. So that's why building this base. The other thing for us too is if you have too many dependencies on, you know, one or two or three, or, you know, if 50% of your budget is made up of five donors, whether that's an organization, a corporate, or an individual, or a grant, if that goes away, you're losing a ton of money that next year. And so we don't want to be dependent so much on those kind of things. They're great when they come, and we typically maybe use those for special projects, but we want kind of sustainable, ongoing, recurring people who are going to stick with us for a while. And people tend to do that on a monthly basis.
Well said. I greatly appreciate you sharing that. I want to expand on that. Boy, I got a bunch of questions, Brad.
Sure. This
one
is fun.
One of those is something that's really, I think we should focus on the mission for a second, because I want to ask you about earned revenue and if you guys have ever, or in social enterprise and how that maybe has played in or hasn't been able to play in with your organization. If we go now actually to the organization itself, Made in the Streets, obviously what's, you know, interesting is you came in, as you had shared in the beginning of the podcast, as the second executive director, replacing the founder to lead the organization. Why were you personally compelled? I mean, talk about the organization, what they're doing, and why did it matter to you? Why are you leading this organization?
Well, that's a great question. I knew at a certain time about 6 years ago that I was going to leave corporate world and want to do something nonprofit. And I've looked around at a couple of places, and I'd been on the boards of some nonprofits and kind of knew where I wanted to work and really thought I would work locally. I'm in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and we've got a lot of great local nonprofits working with homelessness, working with, a food scarcity. There was a food pantry I was close to going on board with and working with. And really the founder found me. He heard that I was looking for a different path, and he tracked me down and took me to coffee and kind of explained the story. And I was really interested, and I thought we would be friends. He convinced me probably to be a supporter or a donor more than anything else at that first coffee meeting, but we had three or four more. But it wasn't until the board of directors called and said, "Hey, would you be willing to go to Kenya and check this out?" And I was hesitant, because I never really planned to lead a foreign organization or, something in Africa. Although I had great fondness for Africa, I'd been to Africa a number of times. They said, "Could you go to Kenya?" And I never had been. And I said, "Yeah, I'll go." So I went over, I spent 2 weeks over there, and I really went in as a skeptic. I went in as somebody trying to find what was wrong with this organization. There's a lot of things wrong with lots of organizations around the world. I'll tell you, I'm a natural skeptic, and I've seen harm done, especially in international locations. And so I went in to find out, what harm is being done here. And I was amazed. I couldn't find it. It was so compelling, the local led organization, right? So here's this work being done, not by foreigners, not by Americans, but by Kenyans. When I went over there that first time to visit, I met 35 Kenyans who were leading day-to-day the operations of this incredible NGO. And they took me down on the streets to show me what they were doing with street kids. And they showed me the school, and they showed me the vocational training. And just over and over, I kept trying to find something wrong with it, and I couldn't. So seeing two things: one, the holistic nature of this program, what had happened over time is they'd really built in not just one piece, but they had said, really, if you want to change an adolescent's life, a kid who's been living on the streets for three or four more years, if you want to change their life, you got to invest in them holistically. It's not a one-stop shop. I've seen programs that did feeding and that was it. Or, they maybe did spiritual Bible things and that was it. Or maybe they did vocational training. But what this program did is it said, we're going to do everything. Because for an adolescent to change, they need physical change, mental health change, educational change. They need spiritual formation. They need all these things so that they can change. And so that was the number one compelling thing. The number two compelling thing was that this was problems that were being solved locally by Kenyans, funded by the generosity of people who had wealth in the West. But the people in the West weren't over there telling everybody what to do. They weren't the ones trying to make the decisions. They had turned it over to local Kenyans. I loved it. I was like, this is amazing. Kenyans solving Kenyan problems with the help of wealth from the West. This is a great model. I can work with this. So that was compelling. That was exciting for me. Or even over the next 5 years, it's gotten even better as we've honed in and tried even harder to push that message. We build relationships globally, but we solve problems locally. And that's become a big part of what just kind of fires me up every day to do this work.
That's amazing. What, knowing though that, you know, again, you're running the operation side of it and the fundraising in the United States, and then the work's happening in Kenya, what have been some of the challenges there? Any things that you've encountered over the past 5 years, anything come top of mind that's been just raised challenges or kept you up at night?
Sure. You know, one of the things is trying to lead an organization that has an American funding component and a in Kenya day-to-day operation component. You know, the actual program is happening over in Kenya. Where's the funder? So being able to balance my time, you know, I started out making about 2 trips to Kenya a year for 3 or 4 weeks. That's changed now. Of course, the pandemic put a real damper on that travel, but even coming out of that now, I'm going to Kenya 4 times a year for about a week or week and a half each time. It's being more present with those leaders over there. That's been a challenge because things happen when you're together in person.
Sure. Right?
You gain momentum, you work on initiatives, you solve problems, but then when you're away from each other for a period of time, sometimes you lose that momentum. And so you have to start over when you get back together. So figuring out that rhythm, you know, it's great stuff like Zoom and other, you know, online tools that have been really helpful to us in the last couple of years have made a big difference for us in keeping that momentum going. That's been a challenge. I think that the other challenge that I've discovered for us particularly is this issue. We're not a tipping point issue. And what I mean is that there are certain global issues that everybody knows about. They've already tipped they've made the tipping point to where everybody knows, right? Clean water. Clean water is an issue that is known everywhere around the world. There's lots of people working on it. It's a problem that is known. More recently, in the last 10 years, human trafficking has become a tipping point issue where everybody knows about it. There's things written about it. There's news media, there's articles, there's NGOs working on it. Everybody knows. When you talk about kids and teenagers living on the streets, it's an issue that for most people in Europe and in America, they can't conceptualize. They can't understand this concept that there would be kids actually living on streets, sleeping in parking lots, living in abandoned buildings. There's no social services. There's no government services. There's nothing available in the majority part of the world to really serve these kids. And so when I'm talking to somebody here about an issue, you know, we serve street kids, it's hard for them to visualize and understand what we're talking about. Because if they saw a group of 7, 8, 9-year-olds all sleeping in a parking lot of a Walmart, they would make a phone call and those kids would be in foster care within that night. And the government services in that city would be helping them and serving them, making sure they got fed and stuff like that. So trying to explain this story and then talk about it in a way that people understand that helping it and changing it is a really complicated issue, right? You know, I tell people sometimes, you know, our job is probably not going to be eliminate kids from the streets. That's really weird. We've seen some governments around the world try that process. They just go around and pick up kids, throw them in a truck and take them somewhere. They're trying to eliminate street kids. So that's not our job. That's not our mission. Our mission is to serve those kids. The ones that we come in contact with each and every day, we're going to serve them with their physical needs, their mental needs, their emotional needs, and blah, blah. So that's a real different concept to talk to somebody about here, because most people hear the Western mindset, especially the American mindset, is, well, let's just fix it. Let's make it go away, right? Who do we got to call? What's, you know, how much do you need? What's the amount of the check? We can just solve this problem. You don't do it that way. You don't do it that way. You take time. You build a relationship with these kids, and it's one at a time. This year, next Saturday, in fact, we'll have 20 kids graduate. They've been in our education and our vocational training program for 6 years. These 20 kids are about to graduate, and then they'll go get an apartment and get a job and move back into the world, never to go back on the streets. That, you know, that's the plan. But that's long work. That's time consuming, long, complicated work to do. But those 20 kids, when you see them and you see what it was like for them before and what it was like after, then you know it's worth it.
That's awesome. Are you familiar with Charles Mulley?
No, the name, I don't know.
And there was a documentary called Mulley. Oh,
yes, I have. Yes, now I know what you're talking about.
Yep. Yeah, I'll send you over the link and maybe we'll put it in the show notes. But a lot of what you're talking about are, you know, things that he saw and
yeah,
immediately like dedicated his life. I guess they he's like a rags. I mean, I'm just even looking online just to see how they kind of read up about it, but it says the rags to riches story of Charles Mulley, a one-time Kenyan business tycoon turned founder of Mulley Children's Family, largest children's rescue, rehabilitation, and redevelopment organization in Africa. So I watched that documentary probably three months ago or so. Okay. And was blown away. And then I'm hearing all the work you're doing and everything. And it's just like, it just hit me right there.
Yeah, it's awesome. There's a lot of people doing great work. And that's what's cool is to find out stories of other people that are doing similar work and go, hey, it's going to take all of us. It's
yeah. Going
to take all of us doing our part to solve these huge, major global
problems. Well, he, like, part of his story, you know, is that he's a rags to riches gentleman. And he went out somewhere one night and he had his brand new Mercedes and he's in Kenya. And he parks it. And one of the kids says to him when he got out that was sitting on the street, said, you know, something like, would you give me a dollar to watch your car while you're gone? And he said, no. So he walks away, comes back. The car it was either stolen or it was completely wrecked, everything. And
they got it washed.
Right. And he had this thought of, I think instead of it just going to hatred, he thought, I used to be that kid. Why did I not give him a dollar? Why did I not, you know, figure out a way to help him? And he went out that night or the next night and he found the kids that offered it. And I think they thought this guy is gonna, but instead he just approached them with generosity. And I think that was the start of, he invited them into his home and he started adopting children, you know, off the streets and stuff. So it was just, it's just a cool story. It's just and a reason of why, you know, he was inspired to start it. Anyway, it's all great stuff that you're doing. And I really appreciate that what you're focused on.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That shirt is super cool too, by the way. Is that an outline of, wow, of Africa?
This is awesome. Africa. That's about where Kenya is. So
yeah.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure for people that are listening, if you're interested in getting involved, learning more, the URL for Made in the Streets is very simple. It's madeinthestreets.org. Brad, are there other things that you'd like to share, other ways people can get involved with the organization or any, I know you're talking about like your end of year things, anything in particular you want to share?
There's a ton of content on the website. I'd say, yep. Check it out. Tons of videos, pictures, content of what we're doing, how we're doing it. There's lots of different ways to get involved. One of the things we do is we want to make it accessible for somebody who says, hey, I want to help. You know, maybe I give to a bunch of organizations. I want to give a little to you guys. Great. $5 feeds a kid. So for $5, we put a big plate of food in front of a street kid every single day. And so we're feeding thousands of kids every week. And so $5 does that. That's one easy way for people to jump on and be involved. But then there's other ways that are, you know, $75 a month is what a lot of people do to kind of a sponsorship program. And so they can sponsor different types of activities. Our kids, when they come off the streets, they go into an educational, it's a boarding school. So $75 pays for their room and board. Or someone may say, hey, education's important to me. So $75 is going to pay for that education component. And then another person says, you know what, mental health and spiritual health and all these other components, emotional, that's important. So $75 covers that too. So basically it costs us about $400 a month to serve all the needs of those kids, each one of those kids in the boarding school. And so we break it down into pieces where people can get involved. And then we give them opportunity to write letters back and forth with some of the kids that are getting that sponsorship money. And we love people to come visit. If anybody ever said, hey, I'm going to be in Kenya, I'd like to see what you're doing. We set up tours and visits of the program. We'd love for people to see it, because that's where the real magic is, when you see what's happening and what this team in Kenya is doing. And I would say, just to anybody who's watching, from a nonprofit leader perspective, one of the things that I get a lot of traction from is being involved in other nonprofits. I give to a handful of other things that are exciting to me and that my family, you know, is excited about giving to. And what's cool is having relationships with those other nonprofits, some that are local, some that are doing stuff foreign. I learn from them, right? And we share ideas. They, you know, I'm a donor for them. Some of them are donors for me, and we share ideas back and forth. I get all their emails, which gives me ideas sometimes. And so that's one of the things I always encourage nonprofit leaders, especially if you're new, become a donor for something that you're excited about, right? Be a donor of another organization, because you'll get a lot of joy out of being a giver, but you'll also get a lot of information and learn stuff that that organization is doing that you may want to incorporate and you may want to add to what you're doing. So I've gained a lot of ideas and a lot of exciting things for me in the streets just by being a donor of another organization. So that's a tip.
I love it. No, I think that is really an incredible thing. I mean, so many of the things that we've done to grow Charity Charge, I take bits and pieces of everything I see. And it's a lot of times I'm pulling pieces from companies that are completely unrelated to the products that we offer and do. And I just keep your eyes open. But I love that piece of advice for individuals that are, especially, I mean, if you're getting, then you're just seeing how they're messaging, how they're marketing, how they're fundraising, how they're storytelling, all of that. So that's super important. And a great idea for anyone that's running a nonprofit.
Absolutely. I even think something that is kind of one of the benefits coming out of this pandemic globally is more NGOs collaborating together and working together. We've seen it happen in Kenya, probably for the first time. Different groups that work with street kids have come together to share ideas and work together during the pandemic, and they're going to keep doing it. You know, they've created associations and collaborative efforts to work together. We're seeing it here in the U.S., with people who are doing work with homeless people here in the US, we've come alongside them and said, hey, can we share ideas? Can we share resources? Can we work together? And they've been like, yeah, let's do it. I think there's this new sense of, we're not in silos anymore. You know, we're that crazy phrase we got tired of hearing throughout the whole 18-month pandemic was, we're in this together. You know, and I got sick of hearing that. But the truth is, it kind of sunk into a lot of us that we are in this together. Like, maybe we could collaborate more. Maybe we could, you know, share ideas. Maybe we could support one another better. I think that's cool. And I think that's something that will continue if we're intentional about it.
I love it. I really appreciate your demeanor and your energy around it. We're going to wrap up this episode. I want to again remind everyone that this episode was with Brad Voss, who is the executive director of Made in the Streets, madeinthestreets.org, if you're interested in learning more about their work. Thank you, Brad, so much for being here today.
Thank you, Stephen. It's been a thrill just to talk with you and visit with you. I really appreciate the friendship that we're starting to develop. And I love what you guys are doing. I love that you're taking something that's a neat idea for business, but you're making it something that makes a difference for people who need more funds and fundraisers and NGOs and nonprofits. I mean, you're using this cool idea to help solve problems. So keep up, man. I love it.
Well, that means a lot to me. You put a big smile on my face. I really love what we do at Charity Charge, and I have a ton of fun doing it. And of course, you know, I just in wrapping up this particular podcast episode, I also will just thank all the listeners. I think by far my favorite thing about Charity Charge, just my day to day, is the podcast itself. And so, you know, it's I continue to do it because we do have listeners. So for everyone that is listening, I'm extremely grateful for your time setting aside to tune into these episodes. To everyone, take care until next time.